Have you ever caught a woman?
Never. Never. And there you go.
After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when I heard, for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a three-month plan, I thought, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all makes sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you, which really is the best part about Mint Mobile. Why are you paying for stuff that you don't need? Say goodbye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at $15 a month. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. And that is the best part. Use your own phone. You can transfer all your contacts over. It's so easy. We use Mint Mobile for our office and we save over $50 on our monthly phone bill. And it took almost no effort at all to set us up. It's amazing. To get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/mom. That's mintmobile.com/mom. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/mom. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
There you go. Call me a chomo.
Number one.
Yeah. Guess what? It is your mom's house podcast. She's Christine. I'm Todd.
He's Tim.
And I got to tell you, this is the last podcast ever from the studio.
I know. This was our last one.
Once the studio that the great McDonald's Corporation funded. Mm-hmm. And after, let's say a not so happy meal, we met the good people at Morton's. Mm-hmm. And they funded the current space you see. And now we're going off to real steak country, to a Texas studio that, as of the release of this episode, will probably still not be done yet.
Well, Chick-fil-A has signed on to do...
Are we allowed to say that?
Oh, we're not? Well, as long as we painted the colors of Chick-fil-A red and white, right? Are we not allowed to announce that?
I thought we had to wait. Contractually, we're not.
Well, it rhymes with, it sounds like...
Sick-fin-a. Sure. Make sure you cut that up, okay?
Yeah. I'll edit all this out.
So that'll be a thing, and we can't wait for the special sauce of that studio to be ready to digest.
I love their original sauce so much.
It's really
good. Is
there
anything better than that?
It's really good. And you dip the waffle fries in
it? Oh, my God.
Come on,
man. Now, Chick-fil-A breakfast is another story, too.
And here's the thing.
I've had that before.
I'm not saying it's not good for you. Like... Eating Chick-fil-A
That's
every day?
Very good for you.
Well, it's debatable.
I eat it every day.
And here's the thing.
My ankle's perfect.
I'm willing to lose a few years, is what I'm saying. And that's what I think one of the slogans of Chick-fil-A should be. Eat this every day if you're willing to lose a few years. And I think most of us go, I am. And it doesn't bother me that, you know... They're not pro civil rights.
No, those sandwiches are too good for that.
Yeah.
Most Texans don't either. Hell.
If you're like, hey, man, do you love gay people? I'm like, sure. And they're like, do you love chicken? I'd be like, yeah. And which do you have to side with? I'm like, how hungry am I? Right? Like,
well.
Yep, that's exactly what they told us when.
If I'm on a full belly, I'd be like, dude,
gay people deserve rights.
But if I'm like super hungry, I'll be like, I don't know, man. Well, you know, San Francisco, what more do you need? You know what I mean?
I'll tell you, I went to Chick-fil-A with a lesbian friend of mine, and she's like, I don't give a shit.
Really?
I 100%, hand to God.
Yeah.
Lesbian. lives with a woman, is like, you know what? Chick-fil-A is too damn good. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
So there you go.
There you go.
Please do not use gendered language.
We gotcha. We gotcha.
So this is our last time in this studio jeans.
It is, and it was...
Wow.
Look, it was a fucking crazy, crazy run here.
It's been a wild ride. We've seen a pandemic. You broke half your body. I broke my ankle.
We had a child.
We had a child in this very studio. We were going to go to the hospital, and I said, no, drive me to Studio Jeans. And I gave birth on that couch. Mm. So that little jeans, tiny jeans, came into this world covered in denim.
It's fucking morning.
It's fucking morning.
And that's when he was born.
We met Danny Brown here.
Yeah.
Brendan.
He jacked off in four strokes.
Not Danny, but I'm just saying.
So much has happened.
Wild to kink.
That happened here where we actually found out who RPC was.
That's right.
We made the call from this chair.
That was the greatest moments in YMH history is when we found that guy.
Yeah.
Man, that was so happy. And we watched Uncle Terry in this studio.
Absolutely.
As well.
If you get a cough, please leave the room.
The most brilliant president ever happened during our time here.
Best ever.
Mm-hmm.
Hello, this is Captain Marceau.
Oh, Captain Marceau.
So many great memories here.
TikTok started here.
We haven't talked about what we're going to do with the actual set. What do we do with this?
With this set?
Yeah, with the set.
I mean, that's a good question. What do you want to do?
I don't want to do anything, but I'm saying.
All right, so don't worry about it.
Well, what do you mean? Like, what are we going to actually do with it? They're going to tell us, like, hey, get this shit out of here.
Yeah, and we'll just be like, yeah. And then we'll just kind of tear it up and then just chuck it in the dumpster.
Oh, no.
This is pretty elaborate, man.
You don't do that.
Well, I mean.
We're going to take some of the lighting rigs, right?
And what about the art?
No, yeah, we'll take the art for sure.
Not the lighting?
Maybe, if we want.
What would you do with the lighting?
I don't know, but we got lighting guys in Austin that are already figuring everything out.
Damn.
Wow.
All right.
Well, is there anything you want to keep, Tommy?
Well, just the memories.
It's just like the gays.
It's just like the gays.
You know how they are.
Well, all this crap comes with us. Anything that moves comes with us.
Yeah.
Her Joel Osteen inspirational cubes.
Oh, my God. Amazing. Yeah. So many things. Yeah.
It's kind of sad.
First heavy segment ever?
Our first heavy segment was...
Oh, I'm about to throw up.
That was here.
Tina made her debut on the live show here. That was a huge... That was super fun for me to do Tina.
I turn into a telescope.
Bay. I do. Whenever I see Tina. Mm-hmm.
I mean, so many, what a great era. This show has had so many eras, so many different incarnations and times and markers in our lives. And this was a really unique era. I think we saw a lot collectively as a country, as a world.
Everything changed here.
Everything changed.
The fact that we kept doing the show during what was it once, just like the terrifying pandemic that happened here.
Yeah.
Didn't we meet Zolo here too?
Yes.
Yeah, Zolo started.
Started here.
I am... A fucking jewel.
Met him.
Annie.
Wish I had a good. Oh yeah.
No, sweating what? like a black man.
Met him here.
Larson.
Chris Larson.
That's
I
my
met
hole.
Him before.
Yep. Doing his awesome fucking Instagram videos.
Oh, he's
now.
Killing it. Hey, how are those b-hole pics,
getting
bro?
Butthole pics. Saw a tit pic.
Dude, big tits.
Yeah, they're coming in.
How about clit pics? Those come in yet?
I haven't seen any, but I'm sure they're coming.
Yeah.
That's where it spits.
Yeah.
Do you get sent clit pics, Tom?
No. No one's cool to me.
This is not an invitation to send them. Please don't.
Don't send me clit pics. I don't, but do send them to Chris Larson.
Send everything to Chris Larson.
And Chris will reply.
It's not going to get hard till I'm ready to come.
Yeah. Yep.
Chris deserves those pics.
I feel so special.
Yeah. All right. Well, you ready? Let's open the show. The grand finale of the podcast at the San Fernando Valley Studios.
Next stop, Austin, Texas.
Here we go.
Hey, TikTok. Roger Watson Arthur here. I want to try a new trend. When you see a cop coming at you, throw a number one out your window. Just hang your arm out the window, throw a number one up. Let them know we're backing them up. Cops, when you get this, if you see somebody throw a number one out their window, hit your blue lights. Let us know that you recognize good citizens when we were saying we're supporting y'all. Let's stick together. Good people sticking up for good people. Number one.
This shit is big time!
Who is Randy?
Don't bring anyone mother to this.
Your mama in the fucking stand!
Welcome to your mom's house with Tom Segura. And
Christina Pajitson. Christina Pajitson.
Welcome to your mom's house.
Like it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I couldn't help think of when I saw this clip
that he's sponsored by Chick-fil-A too.
I immediately thought of,
I'm looking for girls, yeah, for pussy.
But he's not. He's just throw one up there. throw one up there and hit him with the lights. Well, hit me with you.
Hit your blue lights.
Do you really think the police have time to
did that guy throw up a fucking index finger up?
Yeah, what?
Yeah.
Well, we're supposed to put on our blue lights.
Let them know we're backing them up.
Yeah, like, no one.
Okay, man.
I would not do this to a cop. They're going to be like, what are you doing?
They'll fucking put their blue lights on and be like, the fuck did you just do to me?
Yeah, you flipped me off.
what was that?
Yeah.
No, I was saying, you're number one. Yeah, fuck you, man. Yeah.
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 You can't just make up a sign that everyone else isn't aware
I'm
of.
Try a new trend.
Like, throw number one up.
What about instead of one, like a thumbs up? Everybody universally accepts thumbs up as like, you're doing good.
Yeah.
You're doing a good job.
Hey, you should try it. See how it goes. Start giving cops the thumbs up and just see what happens.
I do sometimes.
Yeah?
I'll be like, good job, buddies. Go get them. Go get the bad guys. When I see them going, whoop, whoop.
That's when you give them a thumbs up?
Getting gangbangers and shit.
Gangbangers?
I don't know. I'm just kidding.
Okay.
No, I do like, you know what I used to love though is seeing LAPD. Sumo. Like, yeah, when LAPD does fucking zoom down the street together, uh-huh, I'll be like, go get them, boys. Like, yeah, I do like when I see LAPD fucking getting fired up and getting them. You know, like,
yeah, sounds like you're on this trend.
I'm down.
All right.
Protect and serve, motherfucker. Shit. You know what's so funny, dude? I don't know if this is, if the, your dad did this, but my dad had a police scanner. In the valley?
My dad did not, no.
Oh, did your dad do that too? Oh, it's so fucking immigrant, huh? And my dad would listen to the fucking police scanner in the valley. We lived in like Canoga Park. And he'd be like, code 4, that's a code 710 Henry. And like, he would just sit and like listen to the codes and like figure out.
Sounds like
out
some real fucking schizo shit to do. 127 County.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what he did. But it's kind of fun because like,
we got a possible white male.
He loved it. I'd be like, okay, this guy is right here. He's behind Pierce College, the guy with the gun right now. Listen. And I'd be like, no way, dude. Like, it was kind of fun.
You sit in your chair and you're just like,
oh. Breaker, breaker.
Go get him, boys.
Go get him. Go get him, boys. Go get him, LAPD.
Put the finger up and you put the blue lights on. Know that you got me. What's going on with all his face?
So much face meat.
There's so much face meat.
So much Chick-fil-A in that face meat beard.
I mean, I don't even know where the face ends and the neck.
No.
The shoulders
so
start.
Fat. He's so overweight.
You think so?
I'm sorry. Jesus. He's so burnt.
Yeah. And we were just talking about people being mean to us. And look what you just did.
I know. Shit.
Yeah.
I'm such an asshole.
It's human nature. We can't help it. We can't help it.
We're all just so critical.
Yeah,
of each
we
other.
Just are. We just are.
I'm
now, to be fair,
person.
He's not like 10 pounds overweight.
He's a lot of pounds overweight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to worry about more than that finger getting up. You need to stand up, kind of move around a little more, you know?
I thought we weren't going to be mean. What happened?
I'm saying for this guy's well-being. It's not even
he needs to dial it back.
Yeah, I'm not talking about vanity. I'm just saying like, hey,
I know.
Man.
It's not healthy. It's not a good thing.
I support you.
I support you.
Throw them lights on for me.
BTW, it's the month of October.
Yeah.
Momtober. And I love hollow jeans. Our house is already decorated.
Do you ever?
Now, let me tell you something. I was in the Hobby Lobby in August looking for Halloween decorations. You know what they said to me? Because I couldn't find them. They go, ma'am, we don't have Halloween decorations because the Hobby Lobby is a Christian organization and they believe Halloween is satanic.
How about that?
I swear. I had no idea Hobby Lobby was against Halloween.
You're talking about shit like just like bats, you know, fucking Dracula. And they're like, nope.
Yeah.
JC don't like that, so we don't put it in.
Yeah, I did. I was all like, no way, I'm in the South, bro.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, where can I get all my Halloween wares? And they're like, well, Spirit Store. So, you know, I went to the Spirit Store, $800
Hobby
later.
Lobby's Christian?
Yeah, bro. Hardcore. So they have lots.
Really?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, like I think during the elections and stuff, like they went out and they're like, yeah, we don't like this gay marriage stuff either.
Wow.
Yeah.
You don't remember that?
No.
Do you remember that?
Zero recollection.
Right?
Yeah, they got a lot of flack because they wanted an exemption for birth control under the Obamacare stuff. And that's why they got really, really famous.
Wow, I didn't know. Hey, I just like crafts and sparkly shit and decorations for my house. And I got a
lot of Christian crafts.
I got a lot of Christmas stuff because we do believe in Jesus. High five on Jesus. Sorry. Yeah. Pounded, I mean. And Thanksgiving.
How about you, Patty O'Callaghan? You ready for your Texas move?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Getting in the spirit.
That's his new name there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're definitely Irish from now on.
Oh, yeah.
No, yeah, I will not be frequenting Jew boys.
When somebody pops in and they look back and they'll be like, yeah, is everything going good? I'll be like, yeah, everything's good. And then they'll go and look back and they're like, I'll go, oh, Irish. And they'll be like, okay. Well, we'll see you. You mean Patty? I'm like, oh, okay. I just, from here, I couldn't tell. I'm like, yeah, no. He just got here, Dublin. You know how it is. All right, because, I ain't got my glasses on.
Well, yeah. What you going to dress up as for hollow jeans?
I think just like a slutty Catholic or something.
Ooh, good idea.
Maybe you play a double move and dress up like a rabbi, and you're like, ha-ha, look at these fucking guys, huh? And then they'll be like, what? You'll be like, I'm just, you know what I mean?
Yeah, get it, guys? Because, like, they look funny and they got the hair.
Yeah, until one of those.
Yeah. And I'm making fun of them.
Exactly. And then they're like, he's a Jew. Like one of those. You know?
Yeah.
And then we'll be like, yeah. And then we'll just, that way you'll see who's really like on board and who isn't. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I'll just be like, yeah, I'm pretending to be a Jay.
And then as they, you know, you go, hey, Patty O'Callaghan. And they're like, oh, hey, how you doing, Patty? This is a hell of an outfit. I ain't never seen one in person before. You know?
You're like, yeah, I Googled this. Apparently they wear this once a week or something.
You know, they don't even fucking get in cars on Saturdays.
Like, yeah, they throw rocks at you if you do in some neighborhoods, I heard.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
A YMH original. Now.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah, so many great memories here. Really are some good ones.
This was a good run. This was a good era for us.
Before I forget, you asked me to pull this up. During the show.
Oh my fucking God. Okay.
So a month or so ago, I don't know, 2 months ago, I did Mohegan Sun Arena in Connecticut. And it was really fun. Fucking amazing night. And they had me do this like promo pick backstage, you know, in the tunnels there.
Yes, and so you were on the road. And, you know, you texted that photo to me and I thought, oh my goodness, what a big day. This is Tommy's first arena that he sold out. What a wonderful thing to celebrate. And, you know, the kids and I baked you a cake to celebrate this wonderful achievement. And then I took a closer look at the photo at your face. Go ahead and zoom in on that. Is that the look of a man who's worked for, 20 years hard at his career? Foregoing having children and putting off getting a house and everything just to live his dream. And he finally succeeds. Hey, Tom, you sold out an arena. Hey, Tom, I have a video of a guy falling off a roof and his knees buckled into his head. There you go. Yeah. So tell me, walk me through this expression, because I'm trying to figure out.
Dude, the real truth? Yeah. I was very excited. I was very excited that whole day. I really was. This is one of fucking four. Like, they had me take pictures with the guy that books the place, the Live Nation guy. They brought in Andrew, the agent. They brought, like, it was like, then they're like, now do it alone, you know. So
you're like, okay, enough my joy about the Mohegan Sun.
And then, they're like, sign these things. Like, it was just like a bunch of PR stuff. And that was probably the last picture where I was like.
Yeah. You
know. But I was excited. I really was.
Agent Jeans and I were both thrilled for you.
Yeah,
everybody's
I was excited.
Thrilled. And yeah, and we were laughing at you because this is, I mean, it's.
He teases me about it now, too, you know.
Yeah,
that.
He should.
Yeah.
Because he knows you now.
He's like, hey, Tom, you sold this many tickets.
Yeah.
And he's like, excited?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. He goes, could you fucking show it a little bit?
I know. No, because literally, Agent Jeans, you know, you're coming everywhere tour.
Yeah.
And he'll call you and be like, we sold out this. We're adding another arena. That. And you're like, okay, click. And I'll be like, well, what did he say? He's like, I added another arena in this town. And I'm like, nothing? No joy? No. It's a major accomplishment. The odds of you selling out arenas and making it as a stand-up comedian, the odds are just so against you. And you did it.
It's pretty crazy.
You should be doing cartwheels in every fucking
It
photo.
Is
I mean, it's like,
crazy.
Well, I'm so proud of you. And
well,
but you have a narrow, narrow emotional bandwidth, that, right?
True.
Is that what your shrink calls it?
Yes.
You operate within a narrow emotional
bandwidth. That's the exact term.
So you don't get too excited or too depressed.
But it has changed. Honestly, it has changed since I've been injured.
Tell me more.
I get more emotional. I get more excited. I get more down. I feel more.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say I feel more. I allow myself to feel more.
Right.
And I think it's directly correlated to being traumatically injured.
Oh, definitely. Trauma and torture and suffering purifies your soul.
Totally.
And makes you a better human being.
Yeah.
I mean, I think there's a reason, like, now that we have children, like, hasn't that made you loving, like, sweeter to people, too, and have more empathy? And everybody is somebody's kid in my mind.
Well, yeah, and also the experience of, like, interacting with your kids can, you know, it can change a whole day, like a moment with your kids can.
Oh, yeah.
So it totally opens you up.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're amazing. Children are amazing.
I know. But anything that makes you suffer, I think, makes you a better
person. Yeah, that's true. The suffering is what kind
of
leads you there. Yeah. Another huge thing that it's not going to end because we're moving to Texas, but it's always been a regular practice of this show to find some way to make fun of my best friend, Bort Nishner.
Bort Kirshner.
And there is no end to the amount of people that can't say his name.
So
did you know
weird.
That?
I do know that.
I mean, it is.
It's a great app. Get your tickets that way. Bret Kreischer is an American stand-up comedian, actor, writer, host. You know, he's just amazing. It's going to be an incredible time. Grab your tickets and see Bert. Did I call him Brett? God damn it. With
Whoa.
Mark Norman on September 8th. That's Bert Kreischer and Mark Norman.
I mean, it's not a hard name. I don't
it's
think
not
it's
that
so
hard.
Difficult.
It's not that hard.
Doves with a $3. Doc, why does Courage sound so much like Bert Kreischer? I don't know who that is. Is he a motorcyclist?
Who's this guy? I like
That's
his...
a big Twitch guy.
Oh, he looks funny. Looks
yeah.
entertaining.
Whatever ended up happening to, like, remember he got, like, arrested or, like, they broke into his fucking house?
What?
And, he's been swatted before.
But that one was, like, he stopped. Oh, Twitch took down his channel, though.
I think he went out, yeah. Is he back, Chris? Yeah, I mean, he is back with this.
No, I mean, he's still banned from Twitch. He's just on different platforms.
What was the... Anyone ever find out the story?
Not yet. He's hinted that he knows why, but he hasn't explained explicitly, like, why he got banned.
And what's the theory?
Probably some of the bits he's done in the past. I know he, at one point, took a camera crew into bathrooms at a convention. He got a lot of flack for that, and he immediately got kicked off Twitch for that one.
Gotcha.
For privacy reasons and also obvious reasons.
Okay.
You guys, I was suggested a Tom Segura and Bert Kreischer. I'm not sure how you say his last name.
I mean,
it's like your last name should be more botched.
For sure.
And it's like it is.
It's understandably botched.
It's the best one. This is my favorite one. So Bert just did season 2 of Go Big Show.
Mm-hmm.
This season, Snoop Dogg was replaced by T-Pain. T-Pain actually like befriended Bert. Like they hung out and like, you know, they taped, I don't know, how a whole season of shows. They spent like a month together in Macon, Georgia. Okay.
What's got me away from home? I'm filming the Go Big show. Go to my Instagram and you can see that I'm filming a new show for TBS.
Yes, with Bert.
Well, we actually can leave once. We actually had a show. We had a show booked already.
How do you say Bert's last name?
Crusher. Crusher?
Yeah.
Bert, no shirt. Chrysler.
Chrysler?
Yes, absolutely. He has not been wearing shirts around the whole thing.
Oh, that's new.
Until we start filming. And
I'm surprised they got
It's a lot of no shirts.
Well, he definitely knows Bert.
He knows him. Yeah, he knows him. Yeah.
But Crusher? Crusher. I mean, it's... I don't know. I never
Crusher.
Crusher.
Right, no shirt, Chrysler.
Chrysler.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I mean, we're up to like fucking 25 flubs of his name now.
It's amazing.
You know what I think it is?
What?
Is that because we put so much mispronunciations of his name
out there
that people look it up and like they just stumble on the wrong one. So that gets like starting like baked into people's heads. That's my theory.
Man. Fucking awesome.
It is fucking great. I hope it continues forever.
Yeah.
Bert Krishna. Bert Krishna is the best.
Bert Krishna's great. Yeah.
Stupid.
Guys. Oh, you know, you have your, you've been talking about, because you're going to shoot a special at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm still encouraging Touch My Camera Through the Fence. I think it's a perfect name for a special. But you really want to go with My Struggle.
I'm not so sure. You know, the feedback wasn't positive.
It wasn't?
Online. It was on it. Oh, I don't know what that's all about. But they spelled my last name correctly, which is nice to see. My Struggle.
They got your lipstick right.
They did. They got everything right.
Okay.
And I like that it's so feminine. They jazzed it up.
They did.
Studio jeans. Yeah. Hilarious. But I'm toying with some other titles. Yeah. We'll see. Touch My Camera Through the Fence.
That's the best title.
I know. People are like, what's this show?
If I'm scrolling through Netflix and it says Touch My Camera Through the Fence, I'd be like, what the fuck is this?
I know.
It's a stand-up special?
I know.
And then, like, it has you, and then there's a finger going through the fence. The artwork just fucking, you know, it makes itself.
What about Four Strokes?
Poof.
People think it's a golfing thing?
I don't think it's golfing.
Golfing? No, just hear me out.
Are you laying there with your legs open?
Four strokes, and then it's me as a golfer, and I'm like, hey, I'm a golfer. No? I'm just saying, Kevin, it needs to have a good double meaning, a double meaning to be a good title, right?
Okay.
All right. Well, I've already pitched FGT RTD to Netflix. I'm waiting to hear back. So far, it's been in a long back and forth with corporate on that one.
You can't say for girls. I mean, it's perfect.
I know.
You're a mother. You're a woman.
I know. I'm a wife who rides till death, but...
Four girls that ride till death.
I don't know. They're being stingy, Mark.
How about
Don't Be Stingy, Mark?
Oh, yeah.
Don't Be Stingy?
God, that would be a good one. Oh, man. Well, that happened here. Leo.
Oh, my goodness. Leo. We discovered him.
That was the fucking...
Come on, Mark. Don't be stingy.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Suck it dry.
Yeah.
And well, it's normal size.
No, it's not. It's not.
Yeah, and you know, Ed Asner's no longer with us, which we never addressed, but...
I know.
You know...
How big a load I'm going to swallow.
Everybody was so stoked that was his legacy.
Let me see all that jump.
Yeah.
I think that's what people remember most, is the sex video with Mark.
Okay, you come.
Yeah. When he died, I closed my eyes and I could just hear him, you know.
Oh, so gross. Oh. Goodness gracious. God. He really comes hard.
He does. God. It's been a long time. It's been a long time.
It's not going to last very long.
Show me that you like me.
Oh.
Don't be stingy.
Okay, I got it. I'm done. I could see you doing this kind of thing and saying all that
you
stuff.
You could?
Yeah.
On a video like that?
Uh-huh.
Why?
When I'm dead. And you find some girl, and you're like, you come over.
And I'm like, let me show me that you like me.
Yeah.
Come on.
Oh, stop.
the way that I'm built is sit back that you can't see it so much.
Because you are turning into such a dad now. Like, we were on the airplane.
Well, if you're like me, how come you kept sending pictures to Chris Larson so much, huh? Like that. What happened,
like,
on the plane?
You do stuff now. Like, we were on the airplane a while ago, and you were like, we were landing, and you're like, go ahead, lift up the thing so I can see where we are. Like, you had to know where we were, Dad. And then, like, Storm Dad, you love storms.
I do love storms.
And now I have to be like, Storm Dad, there's something. And then you come running out. You get so excited to see that lightning and hear that thunder.
That's my dad boner moment.
Yeah.
There's a car wash dad boner. You want to see him?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. This is awesome.
It is our exciting.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I love a car like
that. Yes.
Too.
Look at that. Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah, dude.
Woo!
Car washes are exciting. But
they
the problem is I have too nice a cars to take him to a car wash.
Oh, my God.
So if I had, like, a more modest car, I would go to a car wash. Yeah. You don't take the stuff I drive to a car wash.
Okie doke.
So,
I like the multicolored one when they do the rainbow soap. It's really cool. I mean, who are you?
What?
This?
What?
God, babe.
Hand wash only. Are you out of your fucking mind?
I'm so embarrassed right now.
You saw the fucking Mohegan Sun Arena.
Oh, my God, babe. Babe.
You think I drive a fucking Corolla? Babe. Now.
So elitist.
Yeah. This is pretty exciting. Horrible Hilarious was born here.
Yes.
And I have been so excited to show Native this one. Please put the camera on Native.
Face.
Please cue him up. And
but preface why you're so excited. Like,
because
why?
There's just certain types of Horrible Hilarious that I always think in a dog.
But then this one particularly affects him because this is how he injured himself.
Well, yeah,
his ACL.
And I'm not necessarily saying this guy tears his ACL. But I'm just saying.
Just saying he's hurt real bad after?
Maybe. I don't know.
Who knows? Maybe it's funny. Yeah, who knows?
It might be. You might say, actually, it's hilarious.
You might love this, yeah.
I have a hard time believing that.
It's pretty funny.
To you.
Well.
I'm sure.
I think in a moment you're going to say it's hilarious to you, too.
Oh,
okay?
Boy, oh,
all
boy.
Right. Let's,
please just eyes on the screen.
Okie doke.
And let's see how you feel.
3, 2, 1. Oh, come on. Yeah.
You said this wasn't an ACL accident.
I don't think, is it?
Yeah.
How can you tell?
His knee's bending the wrong way. What part did you think he hurt?
I thought it was just that he fell and he didn't know how to jump.
Mm-hmm. Wait, what? Tell me what, because I, like, what happened? I know he went down
and then
what happened?
His knee gave way.
He didn't bend at all.
No,
He kept his legs completely straight.
Yeah, he kind of rain booted this one.
Yeah, he sure did. But guess what?
He's okay?
He's fine. Yeah. I checked. We called the trampoline place and they say he's fine.
This is exactly how I hurt myself.
Really?
Yeah.
Exactly?
Like, yeah, jumping from a high place to a low place and trying to, you know, just doing stuff out of your skill level on a trampoline. That's exactly what this dad was doing.
Did you jump off of a platform like that, too?
The one that I did was, like, it's like flat trampolines in the middle and then angled trampolines like this on the side. So I tried to jump from flat to side.
But didn't your crazy ass tell me that you just walked on it and didn't do anything for a while?
For a full year and a half, yeah. Because I had just gotten a job, and I'm like, I'm not taking fucking days off right when I start a
job. I like your attitude, though. You're right.
Yeah,
you
I do like that.
No, yeah, and then eventually it was like my knee would lock, and I'd have to roll around on the floor to unlock it. And they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, this just happens to my knee sometimes. I'm like, are you going to the doctor? And I'm like, for what? And they're like, to fix this shouldn't happen. And yeah, that's when my eyes opened. I was like, oh, yeah, I should get this checked out.
And then you had an MRI?
Yeah, I had an MRI.
And they're like, you have a torn ACL.
They're like, we're pretty sure your ACL is torn. Good chance that it's just your meniscus. And then, so they scraped out my meniscus in a surgery. And then they're like, all right, stand on it. How do you feel? And I'm like, feels a little unstable. I'm like, ugh, yeah, your ACL's torn. And then I had to go do another surgery.
And you think he's got a knee injury for sure?
He absolutely fucked up his knee. Like, for like, his knee will not be the same.
One or both?
No. One of them.
Let's rewind. See, there's a little bit of bend there. And right here, he should be, his ass should be going lower. And, Oh, God.
I see. He twisted. He landed on it. He probably broke, maybe he broke his ankle.
I think he
too.
Just tore every ligament that he has in his knee. God. Well.
Oh, shit.
It's good that he's okay. So.
You just can't do this stuff when you're old. You just can't. You can't.
And they count it. And they're like, you ready to do it? And he's like, I really don't want to.
Can't do this shit.
Well, yeah. I mean, I tore myself when I was like 21, 22.
Oh,
like,
wow.
You
could
hurt
right.
yourself at any age.
Any age, yeah.
You know, the other day I was with our kids at a trampoline place in the mall. And I was like standing there in the bounce house. And they're like, come on, mom, do it. And I was like, yeah, why not? And then I I have a fucking broken. I can't do that. Like, I stopped myself. I forgot. Oh, yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah, I can't do this shit. I probably never.
I forget. Like, I'll forget how damaged mine is. And then it'll just be something simple where I'll be like, just hop up a couple stairs. I'll be like, oh, this leg's not even stable yet. Like, my left leg, you know?
Oh, yeah. Because
my quad's not back yet. Like, it's still on its way. And I'll be like, oh, yeah, I can't even fucking do this. This is crazy.
Yeah, you, like, take a misstep, and you're like, whoa, that was a close call. I could have tore everything.
Sometimes, like, this happened to you before injury. Like, you know, sometimes your leg will just go like, you know, like your knee. But now it'll be like a full, I'll be like, oh, my God. It's just kind of, it's had enough for the day. And it's like, hey, man, it's enough.
Fuck, dude. Like, why isn't your quad recovered? Is it because the nerves haven't come back fully?
No. Or? It's just that. Muscle atrophy, you know, it takes
you're
a while.
Still getting it
it's
back.
A big, it's a huge four muscles coming together.
Yeah. Fuck,
you know, you compare the two, it's like, it's night and day.
Yeah.
But it is, it has been growing.
Yeah.
It takes a while. They said it takes a full year. I think it's going to be longer.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You're very meaty.
But the day that it goes back, I'm going to a fucking trampoline
place. I'm going to get faded. Get
That's
drunk.
A big mistake.
Get drunk
you think
first.
So?
I know so.
Trampolines are so fucking dangerous.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
I have PTSD and just watching people jump, not even on a trampoline. It's like I have to look away. I just imagine their knees going the wrong way every time.
Yeah, this guy.
Dude, how many people fuck themselves up on trampolines every year? It's got to be, let's Google it up. Yeah. It's just got to be, it's got to be ridiculous. Those and those fucking little motorized bird scooters that are everywhere.
Those are insane.
I mean,
those are amazing. Those stupid. Are not banned yet.
Oh, they will be. Some kid's going to die on, they're going to sue. Oh, between 100,000 and 200,000 ACL
ruptures a year. That's just though, that's a overall, that's not just trampolines.
No, but that is just in the U.S.
Yeah, that is insane. That's
ACLs.
So many.
But how many trampoline injuries per year? Let's see that. How many people hurt themselves on trampolines? It's just got to be. This is stupid. I mean, it's so fucking dangerous. 100,000 injuries every year.
Between 2002 and 2011, more than 1 million people landed in emergency rooms with injuries related to trampoline use. Almost 300,000 of the injuries include broken bones.
At least.
And there's 7 terrifying statistics about trampoline safety. Let's hit that real quick.
Fuck.
That, right there, yeah.
Dude, fuck a trampoline. We're never getting one of these for our kids. Oh. Never.
Can you make that bigger?
100,000,
children
yeah.
under 16 suffer nearly 93% of fractures related to trampolines. Oh, my God. 3/4 of trampoline injuries happen to as what? 3/4 of trampoline injuries happen as more than one person jumps. Oh, okay.
So there's the big double jump.
Yeah. That's what'll, because one guy will go down and it'll launch you even faster. Yeah.
Approximately 15% of injuries on trampolines happen to children under 6.
Oh, no. Forget about it.
1 in 200 injuries lead to permanent neurological damage.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, yeah.
Oh, forget about it. Shit ain't gonna happen.
Among trampoline injuries treated in emergency rooms, 4% result in a hospital stay. My
Jesus
goodness.
Fucking fuck a trampoline, dude. Wow. We're not getting that in our house.
That is
no way, Jose. No thanks, Tom Hanks.
There you go.
No thanks.
That's okay. A lot. Okay. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. We are super excited, and I haven't been doing anything creepy online, so it's fine. He's here to have the great.
As far
noted,
as you know.
As far as I know. Yes. Noted journalist. Chris Hansen, thank you very much for stopping
thank you
here.
Guys for having me. I appreciate
this
it.
This is a treat, man. You've done a lot in your career, but as we were briefly discussing, nothing is as exciting to people as watching a chomo get caught, and you are their worst nightmare. When they see you, it's like, oh, fuck. Like, when you go, just have a seat for me right there.
So there was a case just a couple weeks ago down south. And a guy got caught by the police. It wasn't one of our stings.
Yeah.
And he was upset he got caught, understood that he was, you know, committing a crime, but was relieved because it was just the police.
And not me.
And he says it's in the transcripts of the
public
the police
shaming
report.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I can imagine that, of course, committing a crime and getting caught is terrible, right, when the police, but it's probably when you're like, oh, this can be broadcast.
Yeah,
on television
all over the world.
Yeah,
then rebroadcast on social media, and YouTube,
it.
And everything else.
So, because it really caught fire. You know, like the idea. You pitched it originally as a segment, like just like a one-off.
Well, originally, yeah, I became aware of Perverted Justice, which was the online watchdog group. They had a website, and they would have their decoys go in and just exist in a chat room. And if they were hit upon by an adult and the conversation grew graphic sexually, they would post that person's ID on their website and people could go to Perverted Justice and see it. And I thought, boy, if we could use their ability to be decoys online and combine it with our ability to wire a house with hidden cameras and microphones, it could be pretty compelling. And so we did it in Long Island, Bethpage, Long Island. And I was driving out there, and I got caught in traffic on the Throgs Neck Bridge. And I thought, oh, God, what happens if nobody shows up? You know, and I've just wasted tens of thousands of dollars of the network's money. And with that, my producer calls and said, you know, where the hell are you? I've got two guys who are about to knock on the door in 45 minutes. So traffic clears. I haul ass over there, and we get into position. And, you know, we had security there, but in those first couple investigations, we didn't have law enforcement doing a parallel investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So the first guy shows up, and I'm just trying to keep my heart in my chest. You know, I've confronted a lot of bad people over the years, but this is close quarters.
Yeah.
You know, I've got Ronnie Knights there, my security guy, and we've gone through it all, and there's a protocol, but the guy's right there. I mean, he's in the kitchen.
Yeah.
With me. Ugh. And I'm trying to concentrate and have the transcripts. And so we get to the first guy. And
did he bring his wine coolers? Six-pack of wine
there
coolers?
There weren't a lot of things brought in the first couple guys. They ultimately did. Yeah. And the decoys would ask for that because it shows intent.
Right.
You know, and the police use that in their cases. But, you know, the first couple guys came through and got to the third guy, and I grabbed the wrong transcripts from the dining room table. And I said, it says here you want to do this, that, and the other thing with a 13-year-old named Beth. No, that's not me. Excuse me. Went back, got another transcript. Second transcript was wrong. Finally, I got to the third stack of chats, and I had the right one. He goes, okay, great. We can continue.
He's like, oh, I'm that pervert.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not the first two.
That is me.
That's me, yeah. And
did this, like, because, geez. I mean, obviously, you know, you're a journalist, and you've investigated and read about and are aware of, you know, obviously there's a lot of bad people in the world.
Sure.
And, but did it totally open your eyes to a lane? You're like, oh, wow, I didn't realize it was like this.
Absolutely. And again, you know, we merely used chat rooms from AOL and Yahoo 17 years ago when we started this. So today, I mean, I can't keep up with the number of social media platforms upon which a predator can approach a child. I mean, in your daily course of, you know, dealing with the internet, you know, people are on TikTok, they're doing Snapchat, they're you know, the dating apps, of course.
Oh, my gosh.
You know.
So the creepers have found an infinite number of ways to creep out.
Absolutely.
How do you keep up with
it? Well, I think it comes down to, you know, you get into this discussion about, okay, you talk about the drug problem. Mm. Society is now coming to grips with the fact that it's an addiction and there's a treatment for it. And so there's a combination of criminal justice and treatment. But we don't have an effective demand reduction theory, policy in place for child predators because it's not one type of guy.
Mm, that's what I was going to ask you, yeah. Is that in all the years you've been doing this, what's the common denominator? What do you see?
The common denominator is they don't stand out of a crowd. It could be the guy standing next to you.
Right.
At the dry cleaners, because sometimes on a Saturday morning
it looks like a creep.
Absolutely,
like,
yeah. We've had guys come in right with predator tattooed on their forehead,
the baby raper stamp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean it's you know.
Yeah,
and these guys are hardcore heavy hitters, and they're just bad humans,
right?
And you just know,
you sense it immediately
at the rock bottom of your soul that this is a guy that needs to go away. Yeah. But we've also had doctors, and teachers. I mean, people who were at the cutting edge of cancer cures are in our backyard in Petaluma, California on a Saturday morning trying to meet a 13-year-old girl. Mm. We had Maurice Wolin. He was the guy who I described, just committed suicide earlier this year.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's the sad common denominator is that it could be anyone.
Right. Here's a guy who was highly educated, highly compensated, married to another physician, daughters, and he's in our sting on a Saturday morning there to meet a girl.
So hold on. So he's got daughters of his own. Do we assume that he's abusing his own children?
Not necessarily. I mean, that is one scenario we've seen. But in this case, these guys... And I'll say that Dr. Maurice Wolin was from that middle category, a guy who probably had fantasies he wanted fulfilled, but wouldn't be acting upon them if it wasn't for the internet, the 24-hour access, the addictive nature of it, and the anonymity that allowed him to say things that he wouldn't normally have been able to say face-to-face.
Sure.
And these guys cross this line between fantasy and reality, and the next thing you know, they're knocking at our door or creeping around our sidewalk and entering our set.
Did you, because I remember, obviously, the show like exploding. Was it apparent immediately that you had more than a segment in a show? Like, was the feedback so crazy when that first
Well, here's the interesting part of it is we did the first investigation and we knew this was very compelling television, very important television. And it was on the shelf for several months at NBC.
Really?
And the discussion was back and forth. When do we do this? Do we time it to September? Obviously, it's important material and very compelling material. And a discussion erupted in a meeting about, you know, how do we promote this? And I finally, out of frustration, said, you want to know how to promote this? I'll tell you how to promote it. And people are now looking, Hanson's finally lost his mind because he's going to say something outrageous here. And I said, there's a man on your back porch who wants to have sex with your daughter tonight. And I used more graphic language than that. Tonight, we're going to show you how to stop that from happening. And a few weeks later, it was on television.
Boom.
Yeah. Boom.
And people got it. I mean, people knew, but it was out there. It was different. There were a lot of conversations about standards and, you know, is this, you know, are we doing something that pushes the envelope?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it made people nervous. It made me nervous a little bit.
Sure.
You know, this was out of my, you know, I'd done a lot of edgy stuff. I mean, that's why they have me, is to do edgy stuff.
Right.
Right. To go to Guam and spontaneously interview a doctor who got caught up in our, you know, child sex prostitution story in Cambodia. You know, I get that that's my role. But this was different.
Mm-hmm.
This took on a certainly an identity and life of its own. And to this day, 17 years later.
And it's being like a reboot. Is
well,
happening,
we
right?
we shot some new investigations in Michigan. And we put some of that on the YouTube channel, Have a Seat with Chris Hansen. We're holding the rest to go along with other investigations we have planned in a new series. And we have a series of meetings in the next few weeks, and we should determine where that's going to go.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
it is. It's a public service. And I wish there were a spinoff show to torture a predator. And I would be first in line.
That's going to be a long line.
Well, you know, it's funny because you bring up that it's a service, because I remember it. So I worked for America's Most Wanted. That was one of my first jobs.
Sure.
And I remember when they pulled the plug on the show, and the public backlash made them bring the show back for like 8 seasons or something.
Yeah. I mean, well, John Walsh, who I know well because I've done some work with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and I've met him several times, and I mean that really resonated with people as well.
And the thing is, you know, it was like yours, you know, it's satisfying, but it also, you know, that show in particular, if you look at the stats, it was responsible for catching a lot of fugitives. A lot.
Thousands, I would guess.
Yeah, it's almost one of those things where you go, why isn't this a state sponsored show that never ends?
Yeah, it should be on public broadcasting or whatever. It should just be a channel where you can watch these guys' faces.
And, you know, what's been amazing to me is how many people follow these cases. There are entire groups on social media who follow and keep track of people. Great. We do it, you know, in our own way. That's why we do the podcast, Predators Have Caught, because
I love it.
You know, more kids are online more often than ever before, and that creates opportunity. So it gives us a chance to do a couple of different things. One, where are they now? You know, there are some, and we're going to profile them, who rehabilitated themselves.
Really? Let's talk about that.
Very few.
By the way, I just had a flash, because I remember watching an episode, I don't know how many years ago, where I believe a guy showed up, and I don't remember if he went to jail or whatever, but it was like the next day, somebody was like, meet me at McDonald's or something
that. It was in our second investigation. And again, it was before law enforcement was involved. I'll tell you this right. So the guy's name is John Kennelly.
Wow, okay.
Right? His screen name is Special Guy 29.
Okay. Oh,
he was neither 29 nor that special. We are in Herndon, Virginia.
Yeah.
Set up in a home of a retired FBI agent who I've known for years.
Okay.
We rented the house, did the whole thing. And it was active. I mean, this is right outside of Washington, D.C. And we had a teacher, and we had a guy who was with the military. We had guys from all walks of life, and this guy who walked into the house naked. And the decoys have different profiles. So we have some that are very demure and have had no sexual contact with anybody. Then we have some who are a little more cheeky. And this person, this profile, decoy, said it'd be really hot if you came in naked. So here comes John Kennelly in his red pickup truck, walks into the garage. We had a camera set up. He starts to strip, and he strips down to his underwear. And he walks in carrying his clothes and a 12-pack of beer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the back in the next room with Ronnie Knight looking at this in the monitor saying, leave this? And he walks out, and the producers had put a blanket towel type thing on the top of the refrigerator. And I walked out and grabbed it, and I said, here, wrap yourself up in this. And that stool he sat on became a part of Predator history and exists today.
Really?
Yeah, a friend of mine has it.
And so you confronted him.
I did. I said, you know, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Because in the profile, he said first he was a teacher and then a school employee. It turned out he was a bus driver. But the fact that we thought he was a teacher all of a sudden, and now he's naked in our kitchen.
And did he go to jail that day?
No, because we didn't have the police, there. So he walks out, right? The next day, there's commotion in the room dedicated to the online decoys.
Sure.
I said, what's going on? And Frag or Dell, I forget which, said, remember the guy who came in naked yesterday? I said, hard to forget.
Yeah.
You know, I said, what about him? He said, he's back in a different chat room talking to another kid. And obviously, he's not going to come back to the house. Now, we've got a production problem because this house is wired. If I leave and somebody else shows up, then we have problems. But we've had, you know, 18, 20 guys at this point show up. So I said, set up a meeting at McDonald's or a fast food restaurant.
Yeah.
You get online, find it. We go there, two crews, big cameras, shotgun mics, and we're sitting in the Suburban waiting. And here he comes, same red truck, in one side. We move in, and I'm thinking, all right, this guy's going to bolt. I better have my question ready. And I asked him when he walked out, the only thing I could think of, which is, at that time, I had been in the business for 24 years. I've very seldom been at a loss for words. But I don't know what to ask you first. He said, I'm getting help. I said, but I'm seeing a counselor. I said, well, John, it's not working.
Yeah.
You know? And he faced criminal charges in that case, was caught again exposing himself to a young couple at a park. And he's, you know, living his life and
hasn't been in too much trouble. Of a theory on, because this actually, like, people, you know, think about this and discuss this when they watch a show like that or just the conversation, the topic at hand. Do you have a theory about whether somebody like that or somebody that's pursuing that is, like, you know, redeemable? Like, can they be
rehabilitated?
I think some are, but I think, you know, we talked about the one category that I believe Maurice Wolin, the doctor, fit into, was the guy who was predisposed to it but wouldn't do it without the internet.
Right.
Then I think there's another category of heavy hitters.
Yeah.
Who lock them up.
Yeah.
So those, but hold on.
They can't be fixed.
So, but when we're talking about fixing, is it that the wires are crossed? Are they just, the brain is such that this is what they're into, and it's just poor impulse control? Is that?
I think in some cases, yes. And part of the problem here is that it's not a real sexy aspect of medicine and psychiatry. Right. I mean, there are dedicated people who study this, who go into the prisons, who work with this. But, I mean, if you're going to spend your time going to medical school, are you going to go do that? Or are you going to open up plastic surgery practice on Park Avenue?
Of course.
Right. You know, I'm not dismissing either one.
Of course.
But, I mean, it's grueling, draining work that these doctors do to get inside these guys' minds. And people do it, thankfully, because it helps us to understand. And we know, and I've interviewed them, and I'm getting ready to put another therapist, psychiatrist, who trains people to be therapists and psychiatrists for offenders, sex offenders like this. I'm getting ready to interview her for the podcast, my podcast. And they'll tell you a couple things. One, there's very definitely a link between the viewing of child pornography and offending. Mm. Without question.
So if you're watching it, you're likely doing it.
You're getting ready to do
it. You're getting ready, yeah.
There is a very high correlation. Two, if they've caught somebody once, they've done it before.
Yeah.
Those things are undeniable truths.
The other moment I always think about is, it's really interesting to watch the moment of when you walk out and how, like, willing to listen some people are when you go have a seat and they're like, sip, they sit down.
Yes.
Like the ones who are like, yep, I'm sitting down. Like they are,
guilty.
It's like, yeah, it's almost compliant. Like you're a journalist, but they're treating it like a judge just said, sit down, you know?
Well, in the more recent ones that we shot a few months ago in Michigan, we had one of my production partners was there and he said, wait a minute, this guy, you know, in one case was already given his rights.
Yeah.
Didn't have to do anything. Could have said, I want to get out of here. But complied and sat with you.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, even with COVID, you know, precautions in place. I mean, it was a bit of a aggressive thing to work out in the middle of the pandemic or towards the end of the pandemic to actually do one of these investigations. I mean, we had all kinds of protocols. And yet these guys showed up. I mean, we had in the latest investigation, we had a Michigan prison guard. A corrections officer. We had a guy who was a contractor who did work in the governor's mansion. We had a guy in auto engineering. I mean, this is 17 years after the first investigation. And I guarantee you, we could go back to places where we have already done them, and people would show up.
The same dudes, you mean?
I don't know if it's the same dudes, but the same type of
dude.
Yeah.
Have you ever caught a woman?
Never. And there you go.
But call me a chomo.
Number one. Yeah. We're number one, guys. Yeah, this is the wiring, man.
I think you're
why
right.
Why is it?
Because when I've asked that question many, many times to smarter people than me. And what the shrinks tell you is that when it comes to the female predator, you are more likely to see the teacher-student scenario because the female predator does not like the anonymity, whereas the male predator in many cases gets off on the anonymity.
The more casual encounter.
No, it's happened. Yeah, I mean, I wrote a book years ago about the whole predator experience, and we did have a case where there was an online female predator, and it's happened.
But it's rare.
But when you, in our experience, and we're talking 400 plus, almost 500 guys, you know, in and out of there, not one female.
It's wild the cool way, guys. I mean, I don't know if it's just the wiring of our drives that is so different. We're like men, you know, put out messages, like guys do stuff.
Black guys would love to fuck and fuck good. If you're a hot black guy and you want to fuck me at $23.95,
I mean, giving out his address,
you can move in, but you got to fuck me. I need to be fucked a lot, man.
That's a guy.
Free food, free rent.
He's giving out free food and rent.
Yeah,
like,
he's out of his mind.
Yeah.
He's so hopped up.
That's not.
A woman's never going to do that. Yeah, a woman's
that's
never.
Not right.
No.
Women are not like this.
That's a fellow with some issues right there. Yeah. Just to beat the hell out of the obvious. Right? Yeah.
But it's crazy.
It's on every level. Yeah. I mean, and who does that? I mean, we got into this. I was recording the podcast for last week. The episode's out now. And the guy had sent, first of all, his screen name is Loverman Genius, right? Okay. And he spelled genius wrong.
That's good.
Yeah. So we're recording this, and I'm going through the notes, and I go back and watch all the videos and immerse myself in it, which is interesting and creepy all at the same time. And the guy had sent pictures of his genitalia to, you know, someone he thought was a 13-year-old girl.
God damn.
And I went off on this whole thing talking about it. It's like, first of all, in the history of the world, I'm going to predict that no man has ever gotten what he wanted by sending pictures of his junk to any woman in the world.
Yeah.
Has that ever worked in any way?
I know. It's nothing.
I can't.
It is.
Who's going to do that?
It's repulsive. Who's nobody. No. You don't lead with a dick.
No.
It's not the profile pic. No.
Well, also, it's like, it's so different, like a man seeing a woman's naked body. It is different, I think. You know, like for you to be like, oh, sweet balls. You know, like it's just it doesn't
translate.
No,
I'm sorry. I don't think it's sexist. I just think it's reality.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah,
so
I
too.
Agree. When they're like, there's no difference between men and women. Really?
Yeah,
because
it's a whole lot of things that are different. Well, and if you don't recognize it, you're not paying attention.
You're not paying attention because most of the killing done in the world, dudes. Okay, yeah. Serial killers, how many women? Maybe a couple? Yeah.
Eileen Wuornos.
Eileen Wuornos, our favorite. And then who else? There's not many.
There's a dozen.
Yeah. Okay, a dozen. You know. Okay. Yeah. Who's showing up on To Catch a Predator?
It's guys.
It's dudes. Yeah. So dudes. Something fucking tells me, big difference.
Now, the difference is that guys are just cooler. Guys have more cool shit going on, you know? We're just...
That is a essential difference. Yeah.
It's totally different.
It is wild.
You don't see.
Now, have you ever had a guy, when you caught him, be more obsessed with you? Like, oh, that's Chris Hansen. What up, dude? Oh, snap. Like, more
not
stoked?
Not quite at that level, but we have it. I mean, this week's podcast, the guy knew, you know. I said, well, you've seen the show then. Yeah, I've seen the show. I said, well, how do you feel when those guys get caught? Like you're being caught now. He goes, well, I feel sad for him, but you know, they're, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Those are my brothers, man.
You're the guy.
Yeah, you're the guy.
You know?
Yeah.
And
you're the star.
Yeah. I mean, it's.
Have you ever felt real fear in that moment? Because I feel
couple
like
a times.
Of that, yeah.
Were you a couple like, times? I mean, you're always on edge.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, in as many times as you do it, and it doesn't matter whether the police are in the next room or 100 feet away or. Who's working my security, it's, you know, you're paying attention.
Well, I thought about it in that, you know, all of us make mistakes, right? But you are present for what is a lot of people's most critical life mistake. Like the moment where they're like, I just fucked up my life. You've been there for more of those than anybody.
Right.
You know?
And it's, you know, so compelling, I think.
Yeah.
Because we are covering the commission of a felony.
Yeah.
I mean, and the lesson, the big picture lesson, I've always argued of this series for journalism in general is that it is immersive, it is experiential, it is witnessing, you know, news,
yeah,
a crime as it happens. And it's enterprising in a way that, you know, few things are. And so the lesson is, if you can use technology, if you can use enterprising techniques, whether it's this topic or anything else,
mm-hmm,
it's important and compelling. And it's hard to do. It's, you know, it's a lot goes into it.
How long does it take you to go from, you know, decoy set to the guy showing up to the house?
It can be 30 days.
You're like 30 minutes.
Or it can be, we've had it 10 minutes.
Oh,
we've had cases where guys have shown up literally in 10 minutes after first contact.
God. Naked.
Fast roller.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Six pack.
Ready to go.
Yeah.
That is wild.
And walk right in.
Walk right in.
To your earlier question, yeah, we've had guys who said, oh, you're Chris Hansen. And I said, well, how did you know that? He goes, oh, I watch the show all the time.
Great show, man. Really
good
show.
Yeah, when I miss it, I download it from the internet. I said, come on.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd imagine that in those circles, you're a huge, they would know who the heck you are, right?
We did, everybody knows the Nigerian online scams and all that. And so I conned NBC into letting us do that story. And it's hard to do because, as prevalent as the crime is, to catch somebody is almost impossible. Mm-hmm. And literally, God bless them, they committed to two producers plus associate producers for almost a year, on and off, working and working and working and smoking these guys out and creating identities. And because they're in Nigeria in some cyber cafe, and they can go to the next person if you call them out. And we got guys to meet us in London and in other places where we were able to confront them.
I saw a portion of this.
But it was a once-in-a-lifetime deal because nobody's going to commit to doing that. But the joke after that was, I'm sure Hansen's picture is posted in every Nigerian cyber cafe from Lagos to, you know, across the border into Benin, you know.
Of course.
and probably, like, the fucked up thing is you're that con artist. And you still are like, you feel legitimately upset that somebody fucked up your con. You're like,
damn, yeah, because it's an industry.
Yeah, I worked really hard to do this.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, some poor lady in, you know, Fairfield, Connecticut is out $250,000 because she got into it.
God.
You know?
It's so sad. Like, I saw another thing where they're showing like how intricate some of these cons are with sending people to pick up packages of money, you know, like packages of cash. And like they're really just like couriers. Some of them don't know what they're picking up, and it's dropped off.
We did a story
else.
On related to this very same thing, where they were conning people in the United States to take delivery of packages and reship them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you got somebody overseas in Europe or in Africa, and they do a sweetheart swindle, essentially. So there's a beautiful picture of this woman. That was, you know, cop from some Danish soft porn site. And they developed a relationship with some poor schlep in upstate New York who's lonely. And you got to do this, got to do that. No, she's coming. Wendy's going to meet me and blah, 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 blah. In the meantime, all this stuff's arriving at his house. And he's taking it down to the DHL and reshipping it under the guise of doing all this stuff. So we set up, you know, CH delivery, where you absolutely, positively are going to get it, and we start delivering these packages that we infiltrate on this website where they trade all kinds of information, people's private information. And so I'm delivering them, you know, a couple times a month, and finally we invite him in, and I said to him, I said, who's this Wendy? Have you met her? No, but I'm going to meet her, she's my fiance. And I said, well, you know, you can't trust everybody on the internet. He goes, yeah, I know. I watched that show, Dateline, and that guy, Chris Hansen. I'm sitting there, and not disguised. I'm in a fleece with a Detroit Tigers ball cap on. And he said, have you seen the show? I said, yeah, it's a pretty good show. And he said, yeah, but, you know, he really goes after him. I said, well, you know, yeah, that could happen to anybody. And I was about to say, he's a pretty handsome fellow, isn't he? And I thought I might be pushing it. But that was the intersection of, you know, to catch a predator is crossing over into catch an ID thief, because that's what these people are doing, and unwittingly sucked into it.
What do you think is the fascinating? Because I'm one of the, like, I'm a Dateline fan, and I'm a fan of that type of journalism and of, you know, bios, crime shows in general. And obviously, it's a huge genre. But what do you think is the appeal to human beings of these types of stories?
Well, I think, at least in my case, what I always try to do with, you know, whether it's a Predator thing or a crime thing or one of the things we've got out now in Discovery Plus on the Peter Nygaard investigation or Onision in real life is to take people inside the crime.
Yeah.
You know, on a journey of discovery where they see things they wouldn't normally see or hear things they wouldn't normally hear. Either it's a crime that people aren't completely familiar with that'll blow their minds, or it's a crime everybody knows about where we have access that nobody else has.
Right.
And to me, that's the storytelling. But there is a fascination. I mean, it goes back to, you know, the strange case of Leopold and Lowe in Chicago and, you know, a million years ago, these two kids who committed a crime and were only caught because one had an odd prescription for his glasses. And, you know, I remember, you know, hearing about it when I was a kid and being fascinated with it and you know, and just drove me to be interested in this whole genre. But I think people in general like to be involved.
Yeah.
Like to understand how could somebody do something that heinous and then be a part of the solution in some ways.
And also, I think it's part of it is what you said about when you said the common denominator is that it could be anyone.
Yeah.
It's that we go like, who is capable of X number of crimes?
Right.
And then you always learn that it, you know.
Well, it's like, you know, what about divorce? Why do we have to try to kill our spouses?
Right.
And if a guy saddles up to you at a bar and says, well, I can kill your problem for you.
Yeah.
You know, that's right away. It's, you know, it's a warning sign. That's probably somebody with the ATF or DEA or the sheriff's department.
I mean, Jesus. Yeah. I think.
That was a real moment there.
Well, I think too, like we were watching a movie about Ted Bundy. Mm-hmm. What was it? That one with the
No Man of God. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's this compelling scene where Ted Bundy's trying to convince the guy that he's meeting with, that
Bill Hagmire,
that you know, he's like, I'm not crazy, you know, I'm he has these drives like anyone else, like, you know, you have crazy impulses too, I just act on them. And then I think part of it for me, when I like to watch, I don't watch it very often because I'm afraid, but
don't watch it alone.
I can't watch it alone. God, it makes me messed
here's
up.
The point, Bundy wasn't a bad guy. You know what I mean,
knucklehead.
Just a real goofball. And
he's a bad fraternity brother.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you think to yourself, like, gosh, if I could put myself in their shoes, like, what is that? Like, am I capable of it, too? Is that why people are watching?
Fascination. Like, sure.
Could I kill somebody? I don't know.
Yeah. I think people entertain
that. Have I wanted
that.
To? Yeah.
Everybody's,
a few times.
Because we were talking about that, how everybody's gone, like, I could fucking kill this guy right now. You know what I mean?
Right. But you say it, even, but you don't mean
that. But even in your most, you know, your most rageful moments, there's something inside of you that just stops you,
right,
from acting on it. And then there's that segment of the population that acts on it. And it's like, I think it's, you know, it always kind of fascinates
us.
Yeah,
so
like,
why did they act on it and you
how
don't?
How did they get to that point?
Yeah, how does that happen?
I tell you, the one that I'm fascinated with right now is that Murtaugh case in South Carolina.
Where
you know, the tragedy of the
wife and the daughter and the son.
The son were killed, and then the husband is
superficially shot the other day.
Superficially shot, allegedly changing a tire, and released from his law firm with millions of dollars missing. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he made the statement that made a lot of mistakes. And we're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
He went into rehab.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And when that original, when the wife and son were found dead, the police were like, they didn't even like point to him in any way.
No, and I'm not suggesting I have any insight into it, except it's just one of those really fascinating, tragic cases that, you know, it's like midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think we may have to do something on that.
Do you have cases that you look back on that are either your favorite in what the story revealed or that still keep you up wondering, that you don't have closure on?
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of them, you know, over the years. I mean, I've been doing this 40 years.
Yeah.
Right? So, You know, I'll wake up in the middle of the night and think of something that I covered in Lansing, Michigan in 1981 that, mm-hmm. you know, or you know, why did Billy Ferry in Tampa, Florida splash gasoline on a checkout area at Winn-Dixie and light it on fire, changing the course of life for so many people in suburban Tampa, and simpler things. I mean, you know, I had been clued into the Epstein thing, you know, 5-6 years before, you know, it really hit critical mass, and had some good information and was, you know, pursuing a potential enterprise sting operation in New York. And the security level was just such that we couldn't penetrate whatever he was doing. And so I got busy with other projects, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But it was the Miami Herald reporter who kept chipping away, chipping away, chipping away on a daily basis. She just wrote a book, Perversion of Justice. And Julie K. Brown is the author's name. And she convinced some of these victims to speak out and be public. And that's what made the case. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where local journalism can really influence justice. Because the U.S. attorney at the time in New York, when they announced the charges, flat out said, without the Miami Herald and the work of this reporter, we wouldn't be here with this federal prosecution.
That case is so, I mean, it's fascinating.
Twisted.
On so many, it's twisted on so many levels. But do you, when you look at that case now, do you have still questions, suspicions about everybody that interacted with him?
Well, yeah, because you know, I've been told mm-hmm. by people who I believe know and have firsthand knowledge that there were pictures in that safe in the home in New York, evidence. And I have ledgers that were taken from that house in Palm Beach, West Palm Beach, with lists of names. People were involved.
Mm-hmm.
And there are pictures of prominent people. And so, you know, who's got influence there? I don't like to engage in speculation. I can't back up.
Right.
But you have to wonder.
Yeah.
Now, is there anything I've come across that indicates it was anything other than a suicide? No.
Right.
But, I mean, do the math. It raises questions.
I mean, the circumstances of the death always be, are going to lead to.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's consistent with the suicide, but right. I mean, how does that happen in a federal lock?
Right, and like, you know, when one guard's like sleeping and the guy's on break, and
it's.
And then you had Michael Bodden saying that, for like in his forensic analysis, that it was much more consistent with homicide, or as he says, homicide. that's how he says it. It's so weird. But you know, he's one of the most prominent forensic.
Well, the other issue that it all speaks to is the sense of impunity because of money and power.
Yeah.
And was especially striking if you look at Unseemly, right, which is this other series that I was executive producer on, the Peter Nygaard case,
guy
in the fashion industry.
So a lot of people don't know about him.
Yeah, so
we covered him one time because we consider him to be a cool guy.
The cool guy club.
Guys.
That's a bad club right there.
That's not a good club.
Yeah.
That's what we call them, the cool guys.
Yeah.
So this guy's like there one of the founding
on that,
members of Cool Guy. And
there he is on
cool
the
guy.
Other monitor, but yeah.
Yeah, Peter Nygaard. So we...
Will you brief people on like Peter who don't know, though? Like
Peter Nygaard is a multi-millionaire, borderline billionaire, Canadian fashion mogul.
Mm-hmm.
If you bought a pair of women's jeans in most department stores, there was a high chance that Nygaard made them. Dillard sold all the stuff, a lot of mid-level department stores, and some higher-end department stores. He did private label stuff. So he made a ton of money, and he had his headquarters in New York, Winnipeg, big place in Marina Del Rey in Los Angeles, and a huge compound in the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Bahamas, mm-mm. he was recruiting very young women for sex. It involved drugging, forced rape. All rape is forced, but it was aggressive. And investigators believe that he's probably sexually assaulted thousands of women over 50 years.
Wow.
From women who wanted to be models to young children.
Jesus Christ.
Involving
man.
Druggings, violent, brutal, physically aggressive sexual assaults. And he got away with it because he was buying people off. Mm. And he was intimidating guys like me with lawsuits. And because he was in Canada, the CBC was on to him. Well, he, you know, made their lives hell.
Yeah.
And we were fully anticipating being in his crosshairs.
Yeah.
And we didn't because of the timing of the thing. He was actually arrested and indicted. Right. Just as we were getting ready to roll this out on Discovery Plus. But it is really, really, I mean, I did a lot of the interviews with the victims in the Bahamas. And it was just absolutely draining.
It sounds
and
like
the courage that these young women had to come forward.
Oh my God, I can't imagine.
And then, you know, he was involved in all this stem cell stuff. So he was allegedly impregnating young women, coercing them into having abortions, and then having the stem cells harvested from the aborted fetuses to inject in himself.
Oh my!
In this quest
God.
For never-ending youth and virility.
I mean, is there anything more evil? I don't think I've heard of anything more evil in my life. That might be the worst thing I've ever heard.
And then, you know, to top it off, I get a phone call one day. We're up to our eyeballs in this investigation, and a guy calls me who I've known for many years. He's involved in a lot of things, and says, "Hey, it's a Nygaard story you're working on." I said, "Yeah, absolutely." He said, "Call this guy." And it ended up being the lawyer who represented the guy who was his videographer for 3 years, who just out of a sense of justice shared all those hundreds of hours of video. So not only did he have the pamper parties
oh
and all that,
God.
We had
pamper parties.
You know, the private jet and the stripper pole and going to Asia to get the, you know, the stem cell research. I mean, all that we had. So suddenly, a great story turns into an incredibly rich story with video that has never been seen before.
Oof. It sounds a lot like the like there's parallels to the Weinstein story.
Well, very much so. But this thing, I mean, literally between dealing with investigators and not endangering a law enforcement investigation and getting people to talk to us and navigate every day for a year of my life. Was like a 3D game of chess working on this thing. I mean, it was, and I was just one of a lot of hardworking people on this.
Sure.
I mean, Blackfin Productions, Discovery Plus. I mean, I've done a lot of work with Discovery over the years and hope to do much more because they're a great operation. But, you know.
Is your Nygaard piece out?
It's out on Discovery Plus. It's called Unseemly. It's a four-part series.
Four-part series.
I'll
check
Nygaard
that out.
Investigation. It's get comfortable because it's, I mean, my almost 30-year-old son, who's in television and video production and has worked with me and does a lot of films and commercials, he sat with me and watched the first episode. He said, "Dad, can we take a break and go out and get some pizza before we come back for part two? I said, we can do that.
I felt like that after watching part one of that Michael Jackson.
Very powerful. Yeah. But it's important, you know, and again, it goes back to the Miami Herald and Julie K. Brown and Epstein. Without that work, you know, you don't get justice. And I wasn't the only one covering the story. We weren't the only ones covering the story. I mean, the New York Times worked on it. We worked on it. The Canadian Broadcast Company. I mean, people were on it. But he had pretty much bought his way out of every issue he ever had.
Oh my God!
In the Bahamas. And the interesting thing about it was he was neighbors with a billionaire, Louis Bacon, who runs a hedge fund,
mm-hmm.
and they got into a property.
That's right.
And initially it was, you know, billionaires battling over a beachfront property in Bermuda.
Yes.
You know, and there had been some people who wrote about it. I think Vanity Fair may have done a piece and some others, but it never rose to that level of horror that we, you know, uncovered and infiltrated. And to Bacon's credit, I mean, his people uncovered all this criminal activity in what was a environmental property battle.
Yeah.
And did the right thing and hired people and got lawyers involved to represent the victims and push for justice.
Wow.
And so, you know, we may never have gotten to this point without Louis Bacon
and
his family.
And had Nygaard just been like, yeah, you know, you can have a couple more yards of the driveway if you want.
Yeah, or stop. Because his compound there was like something out of Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
and or it was, and you know, that was really the thing that got it rolling.
Sorry, Jesus. I'm still stuck on impregnating women, forcing them to have abortion.
Girls,
aborting the fetuses, and then taking the stem cells from the aborted fetuses to make him look younger.
I mean, he looks great. I got to give him credit.
Yeah,
he's a very good looking guy. He's,
you know, they arrested him in Winnipeg last January.
Man.
And he's been held without bail pending extradition to this country for trial. And that extradition hearing is not even happening until November. And now he's not been on his drugs and his injections and his supplements and all this stuff. So apparently he's having kind of a rough go.
Ooh, in poor the Peter.
Lockup. Poor guy. Yeah.
Sorry, Peter. I've heard, I think I want to say that if you go to Winnipeg Airport, wasn't there like a statue of him or some shit?
I don't think at the airport, but there were, I mean, he was, you
somewhere
know,
in Winnipeg. There was like,
not anymore.
I want to say there
I think
was
he had
a,
his corporate headquarters. In
really?
Yeah.
Maybe, check out Winnipeg Airport. Is there?
Yeah, there were, he had a banner there. I don't know.
Maybe it was a banner.
He had.
Yeah, maybe it was like a big sign at Winnipeg Airport.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, Winnipeg Airport. Maybe it was. Oh yeah, see, it was like that thing.
Yeah,
he welcomes you to Winnipeg.
Welcome to Winnipeg. Yeah.
Yeah, and he looks like.
Look at the muscles.
Looks like the TRT is fucking kicking in for peace.
You know, it was the headquarters is on Broadway, or used to be at Broadway and 40th, which. When they raided it, the FBI and NYPD, the Human Trafficking Task Force, we couldn't get a crew fast enough. So I actually ran down there with a cell phone to get, you know, video of the agents and the cops because it was, you know, 15 blocks from our apartment. In
yeah.
City. I ran down there. Like being in local news again.
Jesus, but, man.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of Fed Smoker?
What is that?
Fed Smoker is a guy who he wishes he were... You. He wishes he was, it, you know, he claimed that he would smoke out like bad cops.
Vigilante?
Yeah, yeah, but like self-made, if you will.
Right.
And then he used to carry around a pouch that said baby raper on it, and it was a stamp inside, and he would say basically like, you're going to get the stamp on your forehead. And he would basically, he claimed that he had put away bad cops and discovered ones who were chomos. Mm-hmm. And this is him.
Mm-hmm. Hey, bro, I'm on record for a moment. What is this place, anyways? What is this place?
You don't need to film me.
Oh, I'm new to documentary. Listen here.
I don't care. I don't want to be
This
filmed.
Is America, you dumb son of a bitch, okay?
You dumb son of a bitch. I'm a private person, and
I'm
don't want to be
I'm a fucking American,
fuck
you stupid fuck. I can
your,
ask you anything
film.
I want.
He had an aggressive tactic.
Yeah.
Very confrontational.
I think I've seen some of this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this was a alleged.
No, guy's just predator. A poor guy doing his job.
Oh.
This guy's just a security guard. And he.
And what was the purpose of him being.
So, what I ended up learning about him, because he put out many, many videos, a lot of them are kind of hard to understand. But he was really into meth. And one thing we learned through Dr. Drew Pinsky is that he said consistently you find that people on cocaine run from the police and people on meth go towards them. So we found that this guy, anytime he encountered somebody with a badge, he just immediately made a beeline and he would start interrogating police officers on camera. Like sometimes like filling up at a gas station
for no reason.
And he was like, he would call cops, like, are you a baby raper cop? And they'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And, but in his mind, it was like he was serving justice, you know, and he did this. I mean, I think there's one up here. He's just,
hey, are you state patrol?
Just going up to a guy.
What's your name?
Look, just right away.
What is it? And who's your captain?
The captain out here? Or captain
yeah, your captain.
Darcy Steele.
I just had a sheriff deputy and his buddy come up and go, was you filming some lady?
Shit like
Did you
this,
hear about it?
You know, and he would,
So listen here, I have a thing. A trooper broke the law yesterday in Oklahoma and said that stamping a baby raper stamp on someone's face is a rape charge. Do you agree?
Yeah. So he filled the internet with these hundreds of videos like this. He would go to city council.
This poor state trooper is just trying to get gas.
He's just filling up his car. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And he's patient.
Yep.
Sweet.
I mean, you can see his.
So
this is a city council meeting. There's the pouch. He carries that around.
And that's his eyeglass cam.
And then he has like multiple recordings. And then these people are just like trying to conduct.
And where is he based?
He was based in the outside Phoenix.
I'd heard something about this
guy. Yeah.
Was he on To Catch a Predator?
I don't know.
I don't think
I'm aware of.
Yeah, his real name was Conald Eugene Peterson. But he would have gladly accompanied you to
every show.
Oh,
sure. Yeah.
Yeah. He would have let you do the talk, and he would have pulled his stamp out.
Yeah,
yeah, I'm
good. Got a great team already. Very, very capable
team.
Oh,
you need a co-host?
Yeah. Oh, you don't need a Fed Smoker there?
I'm a solo act.
Yeah, how do you feel about stamps? You think we should stamp the guys? I kind of like that as punishment.
Do, yeah.
Like, if you actually are, if you show up where you think a child's going to be, I think you should have some type of scarlet letter. I like that idea.
Yeah.
P for predator.
Yeah. I think that'd be great. Or a public castration or something.
Well, now we have the internet, so it exists forever. So
it does.
That's nice. Yeah. That is good.
And these people follow these cases.
Yeah.
Good.
I mean, I get emails, voicemails. We track them ourselves, too. But, I mean, there's a whole army out there.
Good. There's a Megan's Law website in California here. We used to live in a dicey part of L.A., the Rampart Division.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I would just put in our address and just watch those blue cubes light up around
there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It can be shocking.
It is. I was like, if you've never done that, it can also ruin your day.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, no.
Yeah. Go see who's in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
Megan's Law website.
Well, it's good to know.
Address.
I mean, it'd be worse if you didn't know.
Oh, yeah.
True. You know.
That's why I look it up. Make sure these creeps aren't out there. A lot of lewd and lascivious behavior, conduct, contact. A lot of public exposure.
It's uber depressing. Can I ask you, of all the because you covered Unabomber and Columbine.
Mm-hmm.
When you look back on that, I mean, obviously those are all huge, significant stories. Do you have one that like has left such an impact on you that, you know, you sometimes wake up and think about of those world stories?
Well, I think 9/11 still is, and I was on the plane coming out here yesterday from New York. I was watching the documentary that is out now with all the access to the Bush administration, you know.
Oh, right.
And,
yeah.
You know, it takes it from, I think it's Jeff Daniels who narrates it, but it takes it from, you know, the morning jog that the president had with the reporter from Bloomberg, whom he called Stretch, and starts there. And just reliving the TikTok moments of what happened. I was in Toronto on an obviously unrelated story. And the whole crew was going to go out and have a few pops the night before. And for whatever reason, I miraculously said, no, I'm good. Mm. You guys go ahead. So I was up early. I went for my run, Starbucks. And I'm in the hotel room and I see the Today Show start to go to the World Trade Center. If memory serves me correctly, they popped up a piece of video with smoke coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we're going to check this out, Lauer says, and we're going to get right back. And I called the office and I said, what's going on? And, you know, people are still just kind of getting their data together in New York. And they said, well, it looks like a Learjet or somebody had a heart attack and crashed into it. I said, okay, all right. And then kept watching, had another hour to kill before we were going to shoot more in Toronto. And the second towers hit. And I called. I said, I'm on my way. So I get my producer and we head to the airport. And I called somebody who was with the intelligence agencies. And I said, what's happening? He said, you're not going to get a flight. Airspace has just been shut down. Mm. Get a car. Get a rental car.
Yeah.
Got, you know, one of the last ones. And we drove from Toronto, barely got over the border from Canada into the United States at the Peace Bridge there near Buffalo. And I said, where do you want us, New York or Boston? Because Boston
was the origin
was the origin of two of the planes, at least. three of the planes. And they said, we don't have much coverage in Boston. Go there. And so we did, and we covered the story from there for the first couple of days. And it was just, you know, you had the sense of being there for, you know, Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Or that it was my generation, our generation's biggest moment. And the sense of responsibility, because information was flying so quickly. And it, they talked about it in the documentary. I have to finish watching it. I watched only the first half of the plane. But they talk about the plane that went down in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And the information I was getting from very credible people was that plane was shot down by our military to prevent it from flying into the White House or the Capitol, which was in play. I mean, look, one of the planes went into the Pentagon.
Yeah.
So, you know, do you report that? So in the midst of all this tragedy of what we thought initially could have been 20,000 deaths, you know, it was 3,000, three and change ultimately. And to be in the middle of that, and, you know, you can't guess. You know, you got to be right.
Do you,
and to deal with all that, it was quite something. And it brought it all back yesterday on the plane. Watching it.
When you look back, maybe in general, but even specifically to 9/11, how do you feel about conspiracy theories? You know, because obviously the 9/11 ones are, some of them are very well known. But now with the age of information that we're in, there are conspiracy theories on everything.
Yeah.
And then you're somebody that, you know, reports.
I think, you know, look, it really happened. The people who died doing it really did it. I think the key questions that are unanswered are, you know, what's being talked about now, what's being declassified, or are connections between the Saudi government, the Saudi royal family, and the hijackers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was going through documents sent to me just the other day, involving that. And I think what you're going to find is there may not have been an overt conspiracy involving the Saudi government. But I do believe, based upon my reporting and talking to people who are a lot smarter than I am about this particular topic, that the Saudi government was so afraid of bin Laden and him leading an uprising in the kingdom. And, you know, so many people so oppressed and being paid by the government to just be quiet that they appeased him and Al-Qaeda in a lot of different ways. And I think this was potentially one of those ways. And there was at least tacit, you know, involvement there by looking the other way. And when you look at, and there were failures at every level. I mean, look, the FBI wasn't talking to the CIA, and there are some good reasons for that and not so good reasons for that. And you had, you know, Hamzi and Al-Midar and San Diego, and you had people under surveillance and video in Kuala Lumpur. I mean, there was stuff happening. I mean, there was a lot of chatter leading up to that.
Yeah.
You know, but at what point does that mean somebody's going to pull the trigger? But it was, I'll tell you one story that just still blows my mind. And this came from an FBI agent, a supervisor who was right there with the head of the FBI in New York at the time. And the second tower is coming down, and they push the FBI chief in New York into a doorway of a deli, and the debris comes flowing like a wild torrent by them, and they come out, and they're dusting each other off, and in the air is this plane ticket, and somebody picks it up, and it is one of the hijackers.
No.
They run it, and it links that ticket, links is part of the link that puts Mohammed Atta and that crew all together.
What?
Wow.
Within the hours. That's a true story. We reported it back. You know,
really? Yeah. The ticket.
Ticket.
But isn't that
wafting in the air?
But see, that you couldn't make that up.
No.
That's one of the stuff of life. You're like, wait, what? That's how that happened?
Yeah.
I have to ask you one more question. You've seen so much of humanity in your whole, in 40 years of a career doing this. And I don't know, man. What do you think about people?
Well, I think they're generally good. I mean, every time I you know, look, unquestionably, I've developed a darker view of the world and a very dark sense of humor. And, you know, Gabrielle will call me out on that from time to time and say, look, you know, it's really not all like that. But I have developed just kind of a way of looking at the world that, you know, I do think there are many more good people than bad people. I figured out a way to compartmentalize, you know, the shit of the world.
Right.
And live my life, you know. Does it take its toll? I don't know, maybe. But I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Are there good people and people who just don't know any better? Or are there good people and then people that are just born bad? Do you know what I mean?
I think they're both. I mean, that's, you know, we as a society, you know, we want easy answers. Like, those are bad humans. They're born that way. Lock them up forever. And there are some of those people. But more often than not, there's a combination here. And we have to figure out, you know, why people do this and what the motivation is. And again, it's really demand reduction, which is difficult. And so our best hope is education. And it's part of what drives me when I do these stories and these shows and these series is that I truly think that if you can get into the mind of a predator or criminal and understand a little bit about how it works and then combine that with the voice of a victim, you can prevent other people from becoming victims. And people always say, well, you know, how do you not beat the shit out of these guys? Well, the answer is I'm truly curious as to what makes them tick.
Right.
Anybody can jump out of a back room or from behind a bush and create 10 seconds of dramatic video chasing somebody down the street with a mic. My job, or what I believe my job to be, is to engage this human being, as horrifying as they may be, and get them to talk to me and to help me to understand what the hell was going on in their mind, in their life, that made them show up at this house to do whatever they're going to do. And, and you know, I take lessons from guys past. You know, one of the best questions that Mike Wallace would ever ask is, explain.
So simple, right?
And just stay quiet. Yeah. You know, too many reporters today, and I try to teach this to young people, my kids included, that you know, they don't like dead air. They feel like they have to say something at all times.
Sure.
Let it be uncomfortable.
Yeah. What happened?
Let them talk. I mean, being a good interviewer is a good listener, most important.
Well,
I feel like we could talk to you all day.
I know. My final question, did you steal some of Peter Nygaard's stem cells from dead babies? Why do you look like this? What's the secret?
I, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, I got had a bit of a health kick. Nothing extreme, just, you know, kind of, I found myself one summer getting a little chubby, let's just say.
Uh-huh.
And so I changed my eating habits and added some exercising habits. And actually, there's a fellow, Robert Brace, who is a trainer in New York, who I see, and he's very good. He's got me boxing and jumping around.
You look good, Chris.
I feel good.
You look good.
I feel good.
Well,
clean living and the love of a good woman. That's
there
what
you go.
Say,
That works. Chris Hansen, thank you very much for stopping by.
Thanks, guys. It was really a treat. Thank you for having me.
We can't wait to see the stuff. And the podcast?
Podcast is Predators I've Caught with Chris Hansen on all platforms. We've got a YouTube channel, Have a Seat with Chris Hansen. We've got Cameo. We've got Discovery Plus and more stuff coming.
There it is. Can't wait to see more right now.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Thanks for
coming.
Thank you.
It was a treat.
See you guys next time.
Bye, Mommy.
Suck, Hank! Just let me eat you one time.
Okay.
And you're going to, I guarantee you, you're going to ask me to stay to your house. You're going to sleep for 3 days, my baby. I can cook for you, clean up your house. When you come home, baby, you just got to jump in the tub with all them bubbles. Once I touch your booty, I'm going to make you cry. Guess what? One time. I can show you a top.
the banana.